Suffering from seasonal irritants? As the pollen count rises, support your immune system with Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid, a targeted blend of nutrients and botanicals designed to help maintain healthy histamine balance and everyday comfort. Quiksilver Scientific Cystaid works with your body's natural response to seasonal environmental challenges, so you can feel your best all season long. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media. MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk. Exploding cargo, hacked GPS systems, spoofed navigational coordinates. What's happening with our airlines? My guest today, science writer Jeff Wise, has been looking into a string of sabotage incidents plaguing airlines since an incendiary device set fire to a cargo pallet in Birmingham, England, last July. Soon after, another fiery incident erupted at a DHL logistics hub in Leipzig, Germany. The culprit, according to Allied security agencies and his own investigation, Russia, specifically its GRU military intelligence agency. Under Vladimir Putin's direction, it's escalating its so-called gray zone operations against the West, adding airline sabotage to its record of intimidation, assassinations, poisoning, and internet disinformation campaigns, not to mention the invasion of Ukraine, to his palette of evil deeds. Recently, Jeff Wise dug into all this and presented his findings in a truly unnerving feature piece in this month's edition of Vanity Fair. It's called Flight Risk, and he's here to talk about it. Jeff Wise, welcome to Spy Talk. You have written a startling article in Vanity Fair called Flight Risk about sabotage activities that point to Moscow really escalating aggressively against the West and so-called gray zone activities. You start with DHL attacks on a DHL flight with its cargo, lighting its cargo and so on. Explain that to us.
Right. So there were a number of incidents that occurred in 2024 where cargo shipments contained magnesium incendiary devices that went off in the middle of DHL, as it gets these packages, puts them on shipping pallets. So you'll have, hundreds or thousands of packages altogether. One of them went off. You have the whole pallet now on fire. And so footage circulated, or still images captured from video, of surveillance video, of these fires erupting. And magnesium flares are very hard to put out. You need specialized chemicals. If you put water on it, it just makes it worse.
What airport was this at?
So DHL's hub is Leipzig, Germany. And then there was another one at Vilnius, I believe. I believe there's one in Birmingham. There was some in Poland as well. There's a whole spate of these things.
Okay. Wow.
None of them went off in flight, but these were all packages that had either arrived by air or were destined to be shipped by air. And so it's a rather terrifying prospect of one of these things going off in the cargo hold and just creating a massive conflagration. This is sort of a pilot's worst nightmare, because you have very little time before the whole thing is just
incredible. Of course. I mean, it might have taken the aircraft out of the sky. And as you also note, that commercial passenger airliners also carry cargo in their hold. So a civilian airliner could have been taken out of the sky. European intelligence agencies have tracked these incidents to Moscow. Am I right?
So the operating understanding is that this was orchestrated by Russian military intelligence, the GRU, and that it was part of a much wider gray zone operation against Western democracies that have been taking place for over a decade, but really have intensified since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
For over a decade, this has been going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And no proof has been found of Russian complicity?
I think there's been a lot of proof found of it. I mean, the extent to which one of these incendiary devices, I believe, has led to prosecution, I think, in Poland. But no, I mean, yeah, people have been, no, the degree to which the GRU has been involved in all kinds of skullduggery, including in, you know, the 2016 election, GRU hacked into the DNC servers and helped, you know, Trump go to victory.
Then so, there, you know, assassinations.
Hacking.
Poisonings.
Cutting cables. I'm sure you're well versed in the concept of cyber physical, which is, you know, getting involved in, you know, tampering with things in the real world, like power stations and hospitals and et cetera.
So you suggest that the shoot down of the Malaysia flight over Europe might have been a deliberate act by the Russians. We know it was a Russian unit. Anti-aircraft unit.
Right. So three Russian perpetrators have been tried and convicted in absentia in the Netherlands. So as a matter of law, the Russians carried out this attack. It was sort of a murderous attack orchestrated by the Russians. The contention is that I would say that the conventional wisdom among those who study this kind of thing is that it was an accident, that somehow they, for whatever reason, they didn't mean to shoot down a civilian airliner. I have always been suspicious of, in the whole context of Russia, because I think there's really two pieces to sort of back up a half step. What we're talking about is aviation cybersecurity and the potential threat of malevolent actors, you know, engaging in various kinds of attack against planes in flight. And to do that, you need a number of things. One, you need what they call a persistent threat actor, someone who is out to do harm and has the means and the ability and the motivation to do harm. And then you also need an attack surface, meaning in a vulnerability, a way that bad person can do those bad things. And the point I was trying to make in the course of this Vanity Fair article is that we do have a persistent threat actor who matches the criteria. Russia is extremely sophisticated when it comes to espionage. They have one of the most advanced electronic warfare capabilities, and they have a known history of cyber attack against all manner of targets on land, you know, including, as I mentioned, hacking into DNC servers, hacking into every which thing you can imagine they've hacked into.
Before we get into the alarming subject of spoofing airline GPS navigational, I want to go back to this Malaysian shootdown. In that court case, was it established that it was a deliberate shootdown, or was the defense that it was an accident? Well, which, of course, they'd still be responsible, but
I believe that what they were actually convicted of was sort of creating the conditions under which this fatal event occurred.
The reason I ask that is because you make a comparison here to the sinking of the Lusitania, a civilian ship during World War I. This is an act of war. And it seems to me the United States and the Western, and to some degree Western, has been reluctant to raise this up a level where it would require a declaration, I guess, of war or some concrete activity beyond a court case.
I think that this is an important part of the picture of what we're talking about. And I think it has actually helped to enable the extent to which this gray zone behavior has occurred. You know, the point of gray zone activity is that it harms your adversary without rising to the level of a hot war, because you don't, you're actually in an inferior position where if a hot war started, you would lose. And so you're trying to sort of chip away your enemy without him to get, without prompting him to actually take a swipe at you. And unfortunately, this has been abetted by the reluctance of the powers in the West, particularly the United States, to do anything. And we saw in the case with the Obama administration, Obama famously said, if the Syrian government is found to be engaging in chemical warfare against its people, that is a red line, and we will act. And of course, Bellingcat, using, you know, these new methods that it developed, OSINT.
That's the investigative firm that tracks Russian intelligence activities.
They track everything around the world that they can. They do. They've done a lot of great work in Myanmar, for instance. But the point just being is that once Bellingcat found concrete evidence that the Syrian regime was using chemical weapons against its own people, the Obama administration did nothing. They were called out and found to be a paper tiger. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it's really important to recognize that it, as Russia has engaged in this really widespread series of attacks, there's been a reluctance, A, to identify it as such, and B, to do anything about it. Now, the closer you are to Russia, the more willing the officials are to say this is Russia and they're really up to no good and we need to be careful. Lithuania, Estonia, mm-hmm. Finland, these countries are very vocal about the threat. And even Germany now has really become quite vocal about. And I think with the Trump administration now kind of openly siding with the Kremlin.
And ceasing cyber war activity. Right. Reportedly. So let's go back to what's been going on in the Baltic area that you describe in chilling terms about spoofing airline navigational aids. It's been going on repeatedly in the Baltic airspace.
Right. So planes are experiencing widespread GPS outages and various kinds of spoofing attack. Now, jamming is just you can flood the airwaves with random static or whatever and just sort of, you know, basically shout out anyone who's trying to use the GPS system. GPS signals are very minute. They're very tiny and easy to jam, easy to overwhelm. Spoofing is a subtler kind of attack where basically you are feeding false signals into the GPS receivers and causing them to calculate an erroneous position for where they think they are. On top of that, there's an even more arcane attack, I would say, sophisticated and harder to carry out, called smart spoofing, which basically involves, if you know where a person is, you can lie to it a very small amount. And the navigation systems that planes have basically integrate changes of position over time. And so you can basically cause it to go off course.
You described one incident of a pilot who said, 1 minute I was flying at 35,000 feet, and then suddenly I was flying at 1,000 feet.
Well, he wasn't actually flying at 1,000 feet. I don't know if that was clear, but his GPS system told him that it was 1,000 feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that actually, I believe, was the captain of the European Pilots Association. So it was, you know, a serious person. Smart spoofing is even more. I mean, listen, if you know you're at 35,000 feet and suddenly your you know display says that you're 1,000 feet, you know that's just wrong, and you know why, because you're Finnish and you've been flying in this space for a long time, and you just can turn it off and use other navigational methods.
And the pilots in the Baltic area have been seeing a lot of this.
Yeah, they're very, very, very used to it. They'd probably be more surprised if it didn't happen at this point. But smart spoofing is trickier to identify because you're drifting off. You trust your GPS and you're following the magenta line. And all of a sudden you look and like you might actually be in the wrong country. And so this has been a case where you know, you could start out in Finland and you're intending to fly domestically, but now you're over Russia.
What's that magenta line you talk about?
When you are going someplace in a plane on GPS, there's a magenta colored line that is your path. and you sort of follow them. You automatically, if you're on autopilot, the autopilot will just carry you along this magenta path. If you're hand flying it, you can kind of just manually follow the magenta path, but that's where you think you're going. And but the GPS might be, you know, spoofed. So you might be somewhere else. This so far has not led to any tragedies.
Amazing.
But it's annoying. And I think a lot of people in Finland believe that it's sort of like they're screwing with us. They're messing with our heads, you know. And you could imagine that while that kind of distraction might be relatively harmless, you know, if you're mid-cruise on a sunny day and you've got nothing else to worry about. But if you are in bad weather, if there's some mechanical problem, maybe you've lost a crew member to food poisoning or something. When a lot of things are adding up, this could turn out to be a critical problem.
Maybe one of the reasons it hasn't gotten the attention it really deserves here is that we haven't seen a lot of incidents like that in the United States, but we do have developments in the United States that suggest that something really horrible is going on a part of the interference with our own air traffic systems. We've had, for example, this outage in Newark. We had a crash and subsequent events around National Airport in Washington. We have all these drone flights that people can't quite settle on what's going on with that. So what are the Russians targeting our own airspace now?
We have had a lot of strange things happening. There was a lot of concern. I talked about how these incendiary devices in DHL flights became very worrying to the Biden administration. Just at the very end of the Biden term, they were concerned that Russia planned to put these devices onto potentially American carriers. And even though the devices were not intended to go off in air, I think they were intended to be scary, intimidating, distracting, what you call it, what you will, but to remain firmly within the gray zone where you're keeping your adversary off balance without actually creating a casus belli. But the Biden administration became concerned that something might go wrong. One of these devices might end up on a passenger airplane, might go off, might cause a mass casualty event, and was so concerned that they reached out to the Kremlin, created special channels to get these concerns through and said, look, you are really treading on dangerous ice. You're playing with fire. I mean, I don't know if they threatened war explicitly, but they basically said, this is extreme. You are playing a very dangerous game and you are about to get out of bounds.
And what was the Russian response?
Well, they apparently stopped doing that. Or at least there hasn't been any reports of further incendiary devices making their way to these shores. But we have a president who is... now, listen, I find it very interesting personally that there's a huge reluctance on the part of American media to say anything along the lines of like Trump is a Russian agent or in any way working with the Russians. However, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that he's a big fan of Putin. He has, for instance, not levied any tariffs against Russia. He hasn't really ever done anything that is contrary to Putin's aims or desires. And among the things that he's done is remove defenses against cyber action against the United States. He has put a lot of people in power who have not been able to pass a security clearance. I doubt he himself could pass a security clearance if he wasn't the president of the United States. And we have a deeply compromised security apparatus right now.
We've reported plenty on that, and I think there's been plenty of spot reporting, especially over the recent months when a former KGB official popped up saying that he was a recruited agent and had a code name and so on. Problem is, as is often the case in intelligence operations,
I don't mean to ding you. I'm not saying that you're oblivious to the threat, but I'm talking about from the perspective of me writing this article, Vanity Fair, where I'm talking to a really wide audience that really doesn't know this stuff and isn't going to hear it from conventional media, is what I mean to say.
And the point, and the subject we're addressing today, the point is that there's plenty of evidence tying Russia to these aircraft disturbances, navigational disturbances, and so on. That's the point.
Right, exactly. And what I was starting to get at earlier with my lengthy discursion was just that this is, we have this potential, this persistent threat actor who is not afraid to attack aviation. Now, the ways that they've attacked aviation in the visible sense, meaning we can see the plane blowing up or crashing or being hijacked in the case of Belarus, these are the methods in those cases have not been cyber attack. But I think we know by now, but that Russia is very Catholic in its tastes when it comes to what it will do and how it will do it. So it will use a lot of every tool in its toolbox to carry out every kind of little, you know, it's like a chef with a lot of ingredients and can make a lot of cakes.
Coming to our shores is a significant escalation.
In terms of aviation attack, yes. And I think that the Biden administration warned them off. Now, I think the question you're getting at is, have they carried out cyber attack in our airways? And the answer that I would offer you today in May of 2025 is that I don't think that we have any evidence of that yet. However, we need to keep really vigilant because it's the nature of the beast that it can be really hard to tell who is doing what and why. And so there's a lot of attention. I sort of end my piece with a discussion of these strange ghost planes, as I call them, that appeared over Washington, D.C. starting in March 1st. Actually, there were some in December near JFK in late 2024. But the serious event really occurred in the morning of March 1st when over a dozen airplanes were getting these spoof TCAS alerts. TCAS is a system, traffic collision avoidance system, that was designed in the 80s using a sort of piggybacking off of modem technology that basically allows planes to tell if another plane is at risk of hitting them, and they will present a target on a kind of, map and say there, this is traffic, and they will make an oral noise if what's called the intruder is more than like 30 seconds away. It will say traffic, and if it's closer, it issues what's called a resolution advisory, or RA, and it actually gives advice on what to do: climb, descend, or decrease your rate of descent, and so forth. There's various things it can tell you to do. The Airbus actually even makes a system that they will allow the autopilot to make those changes itself.
Mm. We have to step away for a sec. We're back. So these ghost planes, tell us about what happened there.
So planes that were coming into land from the north were getting these advisories. And pilots are trained to take these advisories extremely seriously, even more seriously than air traffic controllers. So if the air traffic controller that you're working with as you come into land tells you to do something, and your TCAS tells you to do something else, you ignore the air traffic controller and you listen to the TCAS. So this is how serious pilots are trained to take these things. And so we can see from the ADS-B data that was transmitted at the time that pilots were acting like within seconds. They were pushing the nose down or doing what they had to do to avoid this collision. But it was a clear day. They could see, they could look out the windscreen, and there was nothing there.
This is over LaGuardia at the time, or are we talking
This is
National.
Reagan National, a.k.a. Okay. DCA.
Yeah.
They were coming down over the Potomac. They were like 3 miles from the White House.
And suddenly they started getting these emergency automatic warnings.
They get an audible warning in the cockpit saying descend. And again, they're trained that they need to do that. They need procedure is to follow it. And so you had these men starting to descend. Now, again, they looked forward. There was no plane where the advisory system was telling them that it was. And so they just went back to flying the normal descent.
Wow.
Three of the planes actually stopped descending and went around just to be on the safe side.
Wow. Wow. What do you make of these drone flights that started popping up last year?
Well, let me just, and let me finish the story of the ghost planes, because at the time nobody knew what they were, and we now know what they are.
Okay,
I'm actually publishing the story in New York Magazine on the same day that this podcast is coming out. So Ted Cruz held a hearing a few weeks later, and he said that the responsible parties were the Secret Service and the Navy, who had been engaged in anti-drone testing.
Hmm.
Now, this was a peculiar explanation because TCAS isn't carried by drones. And even if a drone had a TCAS system on it, it would not likely be deterred if it was trying to target. Now, in this case, Cruz said that the activity was taking place at the vice president's residence, which is the Naval Observatory.
Hmm.
And this actually, it's interesting because one of the companies that was analyzing the data, trying to figure out what happened, the spoofs were coming from that general direction. So that does match up. But why would the Secret Service and the Navy want to mess with a critical safety system in this way? It seems very irresponsible and pointless, frankly.
So nothing to it.
So I sort of asked around, and a government official who didn't want to be identified told me that the Secret Service was testing equipment at the Naval Observatory.
No,
and
kidding.
this person didn't know what the nature of this equipment was, but that this is what had caused these spoof signals, these ghost planes to appear. Now, it's pretty outrageous. First of all, it was not anti-drone. So what were they doing? It caused disruption in the airspace at a time where already crazy things are happening. You know, we've just since then had this massive disruption at Newark that is ongoing, frankly. And so we are just like left to wonder as members of the public, is the government competent? Are they carrying out, you know, are they overseeing the air travel system?
Eternal question. You know, I remember reporting many years, decades ago, about some electronic warfare experiments that were taking place in the Chesapeake Bay out of the Patuxent Naval Air Station that was screwing up local systems and so on, frying some local electronics systems and so on. So there's precedent for something like this. So what's your bottom line? That it's likely that the ghost planes were caused by this, or there's strong suspicion? We're going to look at it.
So I reached out to the Secret Service. I said, like, this is what somebody told me. What is your response? And they were like, we're working with the FAA to make sure that that nothing we do interferes with the civil aviation.
A non-denial.
It sounds to me almost like a flat out admission, frankly.
Yeah.
They say we won't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone says, are you beating your wife? And you're like, I've taken steps to make sure that my wife doesn't complain to the police anymore.
So do you think I guess we're kind of assuming that in the larger context here of the Trump administration, that they're just kind of laying down their arms in regard to these Russian threats. I mean, do you detect any resistance on the part of the intelligence bureaucracy? That's kind of our subject area. To say, look, we're going to keep going after the Russians no matter what your larger policy is. What do you?
Well, the fact that my source came back to me with so much alacrity and said this, this was the Secret Service, I think betrayed a certain level of frustration with, you know, the perceived incompetence. I'm sort of reading into it a little bit, but that's how I perceived it. I think there's a lot of people who I think most people get up every morning and put their pants on and want to go about doing their job. And I know that the vast majority of civil and all the civil servants that I've ever encountered are people who want to do their job and do it well and see a purpose in their job. And I think it's frustrating to see somebody who might be put in charge of you who is
downplaying the threat,
doesn't care at best, or is actually actively trying to dismantle the very thing that you've been trying to accomplish.
Or is incompetent, doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Up until this point, do you think that the have we sent some warning shots to the Russians in this same sphere of air navigation controls, ghost planes, and so on? Do you know of any incidents where we have used covert means to tell the Russians, hey, we can do this too, you know?
Like a tit for tat response. I don't think, you see, it's not, there's not a reciprocal arrangement, right? Because they don't have the vulnerability that we have. I mean, we are quickly slipping into a Putin-esque situation in which our governance is by openly corrupt and incompetent people who don't need to care about whether the public is inconvenienced or killed. It doesn't matter. In fact, there's a certain benefit to having a terrified and confused populace. And so we're kind of in an in-between stage where we're half democratic, half autocratic right now. But the power is shifting day by day into the autocratic camp. And so the people who are now in charge, I don't think are particularly competent or interested in having a system that runs well. In fact, the idea you mentioned earlier, this idea that like, oh, the government, like we don't trust the government's not any good, it's not going to help us. That kind of distrust in the government is actually desired end goal of an autocratic system. They want you to distrust the government and everyone else. The enemy, so democracy and autocracy are fundamentally opposed systems. One will destroy the other. And I think those of us who favor democracy had believed that democracy had destroyed autocracy, that it was a dead letter. But it obviously is not a dead letter. And what democracy thrives on is trust. The core bedrock upon which democracy rests is trusting one's fellow citizen. To work together, everyone's vote matters. If I win the election, I will expect you to honor it and vice versa. We now are in a position where everything is nothing. There's a great quote that I believe originates with Hannah Arendt, which is that nothing is true and everything is possible. This idea that like this kind of swamp of misinformation that we live in, you can't trust who's saying what. You can kind of choose your own conspiracy theory and cling to that for dear life. And you can't. The point of all of trust is that you can engage in collective action. And to undermine that is to further the aims of autocracy.
And to the immediate subject at hand, if you can convince people not to trust, persuade people, or scare people not to trust the air safety system we have, that would be extraordinarily damaging. I guess I'd ask you the bottom line. This is the summer travel tourism season. People feel safe flying to Europe?
I think people are not going to feel safe flying to Europe. They're not, and not only because of the equipment that they're riding on, but they don't know if they're going to be sent off to El Salvador should, you know, government search their smartphone and find an anti-Trump, you know, if they find out you've been watching your podcast, they might send them to El Salvador.
That's a different issue. I'm talking about air safety here. Can Americans
There's clearly been an erosion. Of trust. There's clearly been an erosion of trust.
But can people feel safe flying to Europe this summer?
I mean, personally, I don't think that the system has deteriorated to the point that it's not safe to get on a plane. I think that the legacy of decades of safety improvements and rigorous regulation have created a system that has a lot of ruination left in it.
Okay.
But it's like an oil tanker. It takes a long time to turn around. But the process of turning around has begun. And once it's heading the wrong way, once the deterioration is well advanced, it's going to be a big job to regain that public trust. And it's harder to regain trust than to lose it.
And for sure. But the danger is immediate and palpable in Europe, in European skies. Where, as you report in your Vanity Fair piece, pilots have almost gotten used to these spoofing attacks and smart spoofing attacks on their flights around the Baltic region, right? So
yeah,
I mean, that's going to have an effect on air travel and tourism and so on.
Yeah, and the point that I've made in a couple of articles, including the one that's coming out in New York Magazine, is that, you know, we talked about the spoofability of the TCAS signal, the spoofability of GPS navigation systems. What other systems does a plane have that also has cyber vulnerability that relies on signals, radio frequency signals that can be spoofed that don't have a security layer? And the answer is that there's a lot of them. One of them is the ILS, the instrument landing system that uses, this dates back to like the post-war era. It's very pre-digital even. And there was so shortly after all these incendiary devices went off in Europe, a DHL plane was landing at Vilnius, and it flew in below the glide slope and crashed. And I believe one person was killed. And it's a miracle that more people weren't killed because there were all these buildings around. But it was a security researcher had just published an article explaining how that system could be hacked. Wow. And so we don't have the final report on that yet. The authorities have said that there is no sign of sabotage, but I'm going to be very keenly looking at that final report, because if a certain parameter was spoofed, then that would show up on the black box, and we should be able to tell fairly easily if that was an attack. But the point of cybersecurity isn't just to identify vulnerabilities and patch them. It's to maintain a state of vigilance and awareness that attacks can come from all kinds of different directions, especially when you have a very complicated and sort of Frankenstein system of systems, like a modern airliner is, where you have these technologies that have been developed over a long period of time, many of which have no security layer. It's basically a mindset, right? As you well know, it's like you have to be on the alert for what could be an attack and just stay vigilant and try to keep an open mind as to what your vulnerabilities could be.
We could spend another hour talking about the reluctance of American corporations and utilities and so on in general to partner with the government in cyber defenses, but we don't have that hour, but we may come back to it with you down the road. Jeff Weiss, thanks so much for spending this time with us. I'm sorry to end it on such a worrying note, but
I think a worrying note is appropriate, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk about it. I think that security is impossible without alertness and awareness and just an understanding of who the actors are and what means they might have at their disposal. And so I'm grateful to you for taking the time.
Alas, it's all true. I suspect we'll have you back on this program before long. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Thanks much for listening. You can find lots more interesting conversations like this one in our archives, available at our home at the MSW Network or on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, mosey on over to our Spy Talk newsletter on Substack, where my colleagues and I offer fresh reporting and analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk, you'll find your way there. This week's Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. I'm Jeff Stein. See you around.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right.
Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.